have reached the National Sexual Assault Hotline, operated by RAIN. To reach a hotline staff member in your area, please press 1 now. If you are a member of the U.S. military or are calling about someone who is, please press 2 now to be connected to the DoD Safe Helpline.
Last week, the National Sexual Assault Hotline, run by the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, or RAIN, got what they called an unprecedented surge in calls. The increase came during the marathon Senate hearing last Thursday, where Dr. Christine Blasey Ford recounted her story of sexual assault in front of a national audience. Patricia Teffenhardt is the executive director of the New Jersey Coalition Against Sexual Assault, which helps to manage the state's part of the national hotline. Patricia, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So we are talking about, over the past week, we've seen an increase, a 201% increase in calls to the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, or RAIN. What is it about what we're witnessing that sparks these types of calls, this increase?
You know, we see this often when there are high-profile cases, that they're highly triggering for survivors. Survivors who maybe have never disclosed their victimization to anyone. And now, as conversations daily are bombarding them about acts of sexual violence and sometimes very graphic images pop up in their heads, and they're feeling almost re-victimized, sometimes that's what's compelling them to call a hotline. Sometimes survivors are calling hotlines because they're feeling empowered by the national conversation, and they know how underreported this crime is. We know how the underreporting of this particular crime impacts laws and policies and the national dialogue, and survivors feel compelled to contribute their story to that conversation to highlight the impact and prevalence. And there are so many different reasons why survivors take advantage or feel compelled to reach out for help during these national conversations, but it's been happening since, you know, the election in 2016, and it doesn't really seem to stop.
And is it also, are you hearing from callers who are saying potentially they didn't know that what they experienced was sexual assault, and now with the sort of focus on this conversation today, they're recognizing that it might have been? Are there folks who didn't understand the severity of what they'd been through?
Yes, absolutely. Oftentimes, one survivor's story, once it gets picked up by the media or we start to have a national conversation about it, other survivors start to identify elements of that story that relate very much to what they experienced. And particularly as I think we're going through a major culture shift in this country, that's really highlighting all the different ways in which we are impacted by forms of violence all along the spectrum, from workplace sexual harassment to sexual assault itself. I think survivors are recognizing parts of their story and that of others. There was a Department of Justice study some years ago that said roughly 18% of survivors don't tell anyone of what happened to them simply because it didn't feel big enough or important enough. But survivors are feeling compelled to tell their story now as part of a national conversation that is incredibly important, especially if they're looking at the potential of their perpetrator to move into a position of power that could influence the lives of many other community members.
What happens on a call like this?
For the most part, whoever is answering the hotline responds to the expressed needs and desires of the caller. So some survivors are calling simply because they want someone to affirm for them that what they experienced was in fact sexual assault. Sometimes they're calling because they'd like to be looped into counseling services. A lot of people call hotlines because they're looking for information about the criminal or civil statute of limitations in their state. And there's a large number of callers that I think don't get a lot of attention, and those are loved ones of people who have disclosed their survivorship. A loved one who is perhaps now for the first time learning that their son or daughter or even their mother was victimized some years ago, and wanting to reach out to experts to help them navigate those waters so that they can help that person along their journey of healing.
You know, what's interesting is also you mentioned the statute of limitations, and each state has its own statute for sexual assault. But I'm wondering what happens, you know, we've been listening to calls also from people who have experienced sexual assault many, many, many years ago, very early in their lives, and are now coming to terms with it. When the statute of limitations has expired, if you didn't know to do a rape kit, for example, what can someone do who is now reckoning with having been the victim of sexual assault, who is outside of the statute of limitations, who didn't take the steps that they thought might have, you know, helped them to navigate this situation when it happened?
You know, I think the answer to that question is really one that has very little to do with the survivors or victims and more with our policymakers. As I think we're noticing with high-profile cases like Bill Cosby, for example, so many survivors had come forward and were denied opportunities to pursue justice simply because the statute of limitations had expired in their state. And so I think that this should be a time of reckoning for those that are in positions to shift policy to affirm what we now know about the impact of this trauma. And the FBI recognizes sexual assault as the second most violent crime. The first most violent crime is murder. And when we have survivors who are now coming to terms with what happened to them many years ago, to deny them opportunities to pursue justice because we have laws on the books that are not trauma-informed or survivor-centered at this point in time, given what we've been talking about pretty much consistently for at least the last 2 years, is not acceptable.
So we've talked about what people can do at the policy level and within the legal system, but what should they do? I mean, I feel like what's happening for a lot of women across the country and men who have been victims of sexual assault and sexual misconduct is there seems to be a real psychological toll that's being taken on Americans across the country. It's very exhausting to have to listen to this for some people. It's opening up new wounds for others. They're revisiting places that they may not have wanted to revisit. What's the best course of action for dealing with this sort of re-traumatization, if you will, the psychological heaviness that comes with having to have this conversation day in and day out?
Oh, that is a question that hits home. For survivors, I think it's really just listening to their own bodies. As we just started this conversation, so many new survivors or survivors who are just now reconciling their victimization or reaching out for help through professional hotlines, and that's critically important. But for some survivors, that might not be the path that they wish to pursue. They still may not be ready to acknowledge to anyone that they've experienced this crime. And so self-care is critically important right now. If you have the privilege of being able to take some paid time off to care for yourself, that's a great thing to pursue. If you have an opportunity to take some extended breaks and be one with nature and smell the roses and go for a walk, if physical activity is a good stress reliever for you, and to realize that as a nation, we have embarked upon a marathon of culture change. This is certainly not a sprint. Culture change work takes generations to have an impact. And so it's okay for survivors to sort of pass the baton for a while. And I hope that survivors realize that they are being held close to our hearts as we do this work and have these conversations, and that it is not their individual responsibility to change the culture. Their responsibility is to be as well and as healthy as they can be.
Patricia Teffenhardt is the executive director of the New Jersey Coalition Against Sexual Assault. And a reminder to our listeners, if you are a survivor of sexual violence and need to talk to someone, the national hotline is 1-800-656-4673. Patricia, thanks for being on The Takeaway.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.